Don, let me take a doctor.
It's been 25 years since Desert Storm took off, and that short, brief 100-hour war, combat war, ground combat war, resulted only in a few hundred casualties. What we have seen since then is the fact that over a quarter of a million of U.S. military personnel that served in Desert Storm are now casualties. Well, let's talk about it. Ladies and gentlemen, it is our distinct honor to welcome the network owner and our sponsor, Dr. Gary Knoll, to Warrior Connection. Gary, welcome.
Hi, Doug. Thank you. My pleasure to be with you.
Sir, this is a distinct honor. You were so kind to us. You did all the documentaries, got us all involved, and you offered us the opportunity to this radio show. And we hope and we think we're making a big difference, sir. You've written two more commentaries, two-part report on what's happened, sir. Could you discuss a little bit about it and how you got into it and what you're finding and what we need to do, sir?
Well, it's a process. When I first came upon the plight of the Gulf War veterans, it was because someone came into my office and at the Tri-State Healing Center in New York at the time and said to one of the physicians, could you take a look at my back? And the physician called me in and said, this is not shingles, so we don't know what it is. And I asked the person, I said, were you in any exotic location? The person says, no, I was just in the Gulf. I was a soldier there. And that began me uncovering what would later be shown to be multifactorial causes of what is called Gulf War Syndrome. Now, that particular person had lesions that were bleeding and said that every evening they would put a gauze on and they didn't know what to put else on there. If they put anything that was antiseptic, it burned. But no doctor they'd been to would say that it had anything to do with the war, and because it had nothing to do with war, they were not being compensated or helped by the VA. And they said, but I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people, including from my group that were served over there, that has some really serious problems, from memory loss to chronic fatigue, from lesions to having gum bleed constantly, teeth falling out. So I began to, as a journalist, I began to see, was there a story here that we were not being told by our government? And then it took 2 years of research and filming, because I started to realize we're onto something big here, and it is being intentionally and with malice aforethought, it's being covered up. It is a real conspiracy. And the victims were the soldiers and the citizens of the Middle East, where winds blow. And when you're in a desert area and you have high winds and sandstorms, you can carry a molecule 1,000 miles. And these molecules could have a half-life of depleted uranium of 4.3 billion years. So I thought, gee whiz, what would happen if someone, a kid, was playing with one of these spent munition casing shells? What about planting food in a garden where depleted uranium had been into that soil, or drinking water? And later, I would get a list of photographs of people who had died from rare cancers, kids, that the doctors at the hospital in Fallujah said, please get these into the American media. No American journalist who's embedded that we've shown these to will do anything with them. They won't take them back. So I did, and I put those into a film. The last couple minutes of the film are just showing a photograph of a young child with a rare cancer that they have never seen in their country before, and then the date the child died. And there was a Cyclops baby, meaning with one eye in the middle of their head. There was a kid born with no brain at all in the skull. All these deformities that are not normal, unless you're talking about the impact of radiation or chemical or biological agent on the DNA. Then I began to look at the soldiers coming home. That was in Iraq. Now, if it was true, you would see abnormalities in birth defects in the returning soldiers who were having children. And over the next 10 years, there is a clear linear pattern going straight up a chart of birth defects, miscarriages, stillbirths that are much higher than the surrounding area, And these are on military bases where the people on those bases were former vets or current vets. So clearly then you had birth defects in Iraq, you had birth defects at home, and yet the government was not acknowledging this, and hence there was no help. So I did two things simultaneously. I created a protocol to help Gulf War vets, which has saved a lot of lives, and including one young lady named Jazz, who's in the film. And when she first came in, it was a very hot day in the summer, and she had one of these real long to the floor wraparound skirts, but it was made out of a very thick material. And I said, "Aren't you warm?" And she said, "Yeah, but I want to show you." And she showed me from the knee to the foot, her calf was the size of a basketball. We're talking about like a 105-pound person. Both of them were. That she was suffering from Gulf War syndrome. Over a period of about a year and a half, we were able to reverse all these conditions through detoxification and cleansing, at no cost to her, of course. And she regained her health. The trouble is, that would be considered an anomaly. That would not be considered enough evidence to advocate. And yet each person that we've worked with who was at ground zero, the 9/11 responders, firefighters, police officers, medics, volunteers, we've been able to help them reverse a lot of the conditions that were unique to all that microcrystallized glass and dust and pollutants, chemicals that were in the air there. Similarly, we help Gulf War veterans. And yet, I couldn't get this information out. So I did a documentary. I ended up doing three documentaries. And one of them, we took over to the Cannes Film Festival. And we did what is known as a guerrilla marketing campaign. It was kind of funny. I took a very attractive friend of mine, took her to a place over on Madison Avenue that has old clothes, meaning, you know, the person who paid a lot of money for the original designer dress, now it's, you know, you can buy for $300. So I bought her a beautiful small wardrobe. Then when she got over there, she hired an Italian, a French model, and the two of them just dressed to the nines. And so they got in all the parties. And when they got in the parties, they gave an invitation to come and see the film. And then at night, they would hang banners across the street, the most important anticipated film at Cannes, Gulf War Syndrome, Killing Our Own. And sure enough, a lot of people came and saw the film, who otherwise wouldn't, because there's multi-million-dollar budgets, there's big PR campaigns, press junkets, famous celebrities. And all we had was, you know, 15 cents in a very good award-winning film. It allowed people there to know that this was an important topic. And since that time, over a million people have seen the film. But that doesn't mean because people are aware of a problem that it changes. So then I met with Joyce Riley, I met with you, and other people who are advocates, articulate, and who are committed as social activists on humane grounds to share the information you have with others. And that led me to go down to Washington and interview Congressman Rogers and senators about, here's a problem, what's being done about it. And then I started to see the power of the military-industrial complex, what Dwight Eisenhower said just before he left office. These men know the problem, but the military-industrial complex, the Pentagon, the Defense Department, the VA are so powerful that a message of truth was not getting out. So I began a series of programs on my radio show, both on ABC Network, WMCA, and on WBAI, and we did all total about 40 programs. I did an article, and then I decided to do an updated article. So the most recent article shows that there's over 100 studies, independent studies, showing Gulf War Syndrome is real, it's not all in your mind, and who's responsible? How did this cover-up happen? So it really gives the person who suffered or their family an opportunity to know that this was what happened, how it happened. And it wasn't any one thing, because I found people who never went to the Gulf. They served stateside, but they got their vaccines. They suffered. Then others who went to the Gulf but didn't serve in combat, but they got their vaccines and were exposed to oil well fires, of which there were thousands in Kuwait, and they were exposed to biological weapons detonations where there was no protection or warning. It's, you just see all these GIs sitting around as they detonate a munitions supply of Iraq, and suddenly this orange-brown donut-shaped cloud goes in the air, and everyone's kind of looking, and no one has on hazmat suits, no one has on respirators. They're just out there watching this, not realizing this is biological weapon being microcrystallized. You're going to breathe it in, and indeed it would later be shown that the clouds took that into the course that impacted over 100,000 GIs. Then we show that the Scud missiles with the different types of biological and chemical warfares. One particular case, there was two people from one platoon. They said they heard the Scud missile go off. You could see it in the sky at night go off. Then you could feel something landing on you, like someone sprinkling a powder on you, and then your skin began to burn. They were all rushing to wash this off, and their eyes burned, their throat burns, people's tongues swelled, their lips swelled and swelled. And then the next morning, these guys show up with bulldozers and trucks, and they're loading up the topsoil, putting it in a truck. They're all in hazmat suits, and they tell these guys, nothing happened here. Nothing. In point of fact, 14,000 alarms went off during the first Gulf conflict, 1991, and yet we were told there wasn't a single biological or chemical weapon explosion, and that's an out-and-out lie. And yet they had to have the official position. And why? Why would they lie about it? Why not just be honest? It was because where did Saddam Hussein get his biological and chemical weapons? From Great Britain and the United States. So I found the route that they took through the CDC and through the Department of Agriculture to get these supplies over to Saddam, who would then use them against the Kurds and the Iran. They were in an eight-year war with Iran. And at that point, Saddam was our vessel in the Middle East, and our enemy was Iran. So he was the one we were supplying, and it wouldn't look good. Now, later he was hung because he used these biologicals on the Kurds. Well, there was no mention of the fact that we supplied that and we allowed it. We continued to support him after those Kurds ended up being poisoned and gassed. So I did the whole story, and the final effort was to make one use of the Internet that we haven't had in the past, that we do now, and major places have picked this story up. So it's Echo Watch and Global Research and Green Med Info. We're talking about thousands of places have now posted part one and part two of the article. They can read it on your site, Doug, or on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Additionally, I did another documentary, different in that I was told that there were some homeless vets living in the woods over around Titusville. I didn't know the area. I went over there. I took my camera crew, and it took us a while, and I didn't find out about the homeless vets until I kept asking people on different blocks, and one person said, yeah, there's some homeless vets who live in this guy's woods. I said, what guy's woods? Well, this guy who owns land, and he allows them to live on his property. So I found the street, this little cul-de-sac. I went into the woods, and sure enough, at 10 o'clock in the morning, on a blisteringly hot morning, I come across this tiny little encampment. We're talking maybe 30 foot by 40 feet. And in this tiny little encampment, there are a bunch of people, and they're all sleeping, and there's a bunch of beer cans in a pile in front of them. And I woke them up, and I said, fellas, are you willing to talk about your story? I want to get the world to know what's going on. And they did, and we all day. And they introduced me to other people in other parts of the woods. And one of the saddest stories was that there was one guy who was staying by himself. The reason he was staying by himself is because he said he didn't like drugs, he didn't like alcohol, he didn't like just being around negative people. And a lot of these people, he said, the Gulf or the vets, he said, were just depressed and angry. And his little pup tent, he had some folded T-shirts, folded shorts, folded pants. He had a little bag that had cans of beans in it. In other words, his was a neat little place, and he had made himself a latrine. And he was alone, And but on his T-shirt, there was blood. And I said, "You're bleeding." He said, "I know." And I said, "Could I take a look?" So he pulled up his T-shirt, and he had two heart stents. And I said, "These are infected. You've got sepsis, and sepsis can lead to septicemia, and that could kill you." And he reached in his pocket, and he took out a crumpled piece of paper, and he handed it to me. And I opened it up, and it was a prescription for an antibiotic. And it was, I believe, $76. And I said, "Well, this is what you need. You need this antibiotic." And he said, "I don't have the money." I said, "What about the VA? VA says that it's not tour duty related." I said, "How much money do you have?" He said, "I've got about $7. He said, "Each day I walk from here about a mile to the beach, and I go in the water, and with the hope that maybe the salt water will help this." I said, "No, just the opposite. The salt water is filled with bacteria, and that will hurt it." He said, "Well, then I take a shower, go to the bathroom, take a shower there where people wash off from the sand, but that's actually my shower, and I go early enough so I don't draw attention to myself, and then I come back, and then I go in and try to get work, but they won't hire you if you're a homeless vet." And then at noon, I walk in, and there's a place called the Daily Bread that gives us, you know, a meal, and people can actually take a shower there, and they actually have some food. And he said, "But there's not a whole lot of life for those of us who served our country. So, well, unlike other people, I can't let that go." So I said, "Well, I'll take care of this. I'll get you in a hotel. We have air conditioning. We'll get you some medication to stop this and see that you can get back on your feet. I can help a few people. I can't help all of them." And my heart goes out to him. In fact, I met a sergeant major who had a little motel unit, 12 rooms. And the people had to sign out. He tried to train them to get jobs. They could have a place to live with her family and have food. But the food was all donated food, and it wasn't healthy. But this man was a good man, doing all he could to help these homeless vets. And then I went to the stand down, and that's where it really galvanized me. I was told the stand down, and for those of you who don't know it, a stand down is where veterans meet in a place like a field, and they'll set up tables to help the vets who need help. It might be with a haircut. It might be a dentist who's looking at someone's teeth. It might be a medical doctor doing a basic exam that they're not treating anything, but at least they're letting people know what's what. It might be food, boots, sleeping blanket, whatever can be brought there to help the vets. And so I set my camera up, and it was totally silent. I turned to the cameraman, and I said, "Do you think we're in the right location?" He said, "Well, this location." And it was dead silent. And then as the fog lifted, here's a line that went clear down a mile-long road. There must have been 6,000 people, dead silent. And they went in, and all day long, so I filmed all day long there. And that's where I found out that if in Orlando, Florida, if you're caught as a church in a public outdoor facility that average people can go to and have picnics and barbecue, but if you're serving homeless vets, you can go to jail. And I found that hard to believe. And there was they had just torn down a vet's little encampment and bulldozed it into the ground, including a guy who had his father's flag from the Korean War and another guy who had all of his tools, and they destroyed everything. And so someone pointed out the mayor, and I went over and I confronted him, and he was not candid. So one of the guys named Taylor challenged him, and I got all this on camera. I'm glad I did. All this went into the documentary called American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed. So I set up a way of helping the Daily Bread, and then I told that Sergeant Major I'm going to do something for the vets. So I've just finished building a complete home that will have room for 10 homeless vets, but I have to go through the state and get the different permits and for the therapist, holistic and natural therapies to help them get back on their feet. And we're in the process of doing that, but at least now the physical structure is done. And now I'm also looking to go over to Titusville find some vets who want to be self-sufficient, build them a hydroponic house, so they'll not only have food for themselves 12 months a year, but they can sell it at a farmer's market, and then see if we can't work with one of the communities to have a veterans farmer's market, where the vets can make foods and breads and do crafts and arts. And there is no such thing. And if we did it, I believe it would be popular, and then have the vets run it, and then they can help get out of the woods, now the tents, into some homes, living accommodations better, and then help other vets. So that's where I've been on this.
It's an incredible story, sir. I know the three of us have lived, Denise and I have lived this from Desert Storm forward, and Ray's lived it from Vietnam forward, and it's a daily struggle. All of us have worked with individuals that need care, can't get care. The suicide responses. I mean, Denise, I mean, for years and years and years, you've responded to suicide. Ray, you're working with the active duty troops right now and trying to prevent them from taking that final step.
Yeah, I was with a bunch of yesterday, and Dr. Knowles, I'm really humbled and just amazed at what you're saying today. I think it's one of the greatest cover-ups ever been in history, and I appreciate so much you and Dr. Brokey and different ones standing up like you are standard bearers, trying to make this message known. But I was with a bunch yesterday, and these guys are on the brink of breaking. They're getting out of the military, and they're going to be in just like you were talking about. They're going to go to the woods, and I'm trying to reach everybody I can. But mine is just a very small piece that I'm doing. But I thank both of you and Denise also for all the work you guys are doing. I'm just amazed by it.
Thank you. Well, we can't sit by if we are people of conscious and spiritual values and allow those who cannot help themselves to suffer. It's not the way life is. If we have a gift, you give a gift. That is the rule of life. But when a vet gives, and I'm opposed to the wars, but I support the vets.
Right.
And so when I see what they've sacrificed, and then you look at the average person who's never sacrificed in the same way, maybe other sacrifices, and then you see how they've been betrayed by the Cheneys and even the people in the media, where with the hundreds of millions of dollars collectively that the Glenn Becks and the Bill O'Reillys and the Sean Hannitys and all these people make collectively, or have access to, why haven't they built a veterans village?
Exactly.
Why haven't they supported a veterans food bank where you grow the food and then help not only the veterans but also other people? It's easy to talk like you're championing their cause. It's a different thing to actually go out there and help them in some other way than in tokenism. And I don't believe in tokenism. But if you're going to help someone, you help them. And I'd like to see them helping.
Gary?
Yes. Hi.
This is Denise Nichols. Listen, I want to tell you, you sent 535 copies of the first movie, I think, up to me when I was working the Hill, and each of them went to every office on the Hill. I tried to encourage them to watch it. I think that was the first one and not the second one, if I remember correctly. And I want to thank you for, giving all those 535 copies. I mean, that's a lot. And I wanted to kind of update you and Ray and everybody on the air today of what's going on. I've been up in D.C. for a while now, and I wanted to update you on the just obnoxious stuff we're putting up with. The VA, about a little over a year ago, I think it was January, February of last year that we had the public meetings, but the VA contracts out these studies to the Institute of Medicine with the National Academy of Science. And that's how we add presumptive conditions to our legislation. That's what's been done with Agent Orange vets and with us. Right now, we can only really get them if they're chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, irritable bowel. If they have the other symptoms, they're kind of brushing those off, even though that's in our law. The ones that we can get through are usually chronic fatigue and fibro and the IBS, irritable bowel. So they contracted this out to see about reviewing all the research to see if they could add more presumptives. And we were pushing for brain cancers, for the cancers, for the hypercoagulation problem that we've shown through research. They came back and issued their report and just basically went backwards to PTSD, did keep chronic fatigue and fibro, but basically this was infiltrated by people in D.C., or Bad Boy Network and Bad Girl Network, I guess, too, Kelly Brooks, Stephen Kaiser, people like that that we've known about, and we try to identify it when it happens and get it corrected before they spend this money on these studies that are supposed to help us. So we came out worse than ever before, totally disgusted. So Mr. Benz and Anthony Hardy have been working the Hill. They went back over to the Hill, to the House Veterans Affairs Committee, Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation. It's been 3 years since we had any hearings on the Hill. They were mad. They were upset. So we had a hearing. Jim Benz had prepared testimony. David Wynette, our Marine, had prepared testimony. Submitted for the record, we had Roberta White, we had Anthony Hardy, we had the VA there. So it was brought up, and they're upset. They're not going to let it down and know that they're planning another hearing. But in the meantime, the other thing that's happening, and I was at both of those things, is that every year we have good researchers trying to help us. Kimberly Sullivan and Roberta White from Boston University. We have Dr. Klimas down in Florida and Miami. We have Dr. Steele that's been involved since the get-go, and she's just now moved from Waco down to Houston at Baylor Medical Center. We have a consortium study. You're always complaining we don't have bigger numbers on our research. This consortium study, you go to one of the three sites, Boston, Miami, or Houston, and there's, you know, it's a research study, but they're doing the blood, the sputum's being sent to University of Adelaide in Australia. We're going to nail these biomarkers. It's very close. We have quite a few of our researchers looking for that biomarker, that diagnostic tool that will just put all this to bed, plus the brain diagnostic tools. So we have that going on. Now, what's coming up tomorrow afternoon is the IOM, National Academy of Science, directed by Congress this time to look at the CDMRP program overall. Now, we have the Gulf War Illness Research Program, but there is, like, I think 30 other programs over there, some of them more specific, like TBI, to wartime experience, some of them, you know, some of the cancers. But there is an effort now to cut this program, Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, through the Defense Approach. So every year we have to fight for that funding. It was started by former Rep. Kachinik, and Senator Sanders got us over the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program in 2005. We started with funding at $5 million. You know that doesn't go far with medical research. We have gotten up to the point of $20 million a year, and we're asking for that to be maintained. Now, just this week, we got a letter out for the Senate side of what we do every year. Now, this is for everybody out there in the listening audience, and Gary, if you can help us too, get it out there. But our Senate letter is out. It was released yesterday, I believe. And the senator that's leading us is Tammy Baldwin. We couldn't find a Republican to co-lead with her. But we need as many people to step up on the Hill and sign. And what people have to do is call the U.S. senators in D.C. office, not home offices, in their D.C. office, and you ask, get past the receptionist, and ask to talk who handles defense appropriations issues. That's the staffer that you need to talk to, defense appropriations issues. And the specific request is simple. I'm requesting a senator, whoever it may be, sign on to the Baldwin Dear Colleague letter for adequate fiscal year 17 funding. Fiscal year 17 funding for the Guffor Illness Research Program within the Congressionally Directed Medical Research Program, CDMRP. Okay, we're telling people you need to call. The deadline to get them signed on is March 15th. Okay? So what happens is we have to really get out there and make these phone calls to 100 senators and ask them to sign on with Senator Baldwin's letter for Guffor Illness Treatment Research. Her letter reads as follows. Dear colleague, I invite you to join me in sending the attached letter to the Defense Appropriations Subcommittee requesting necessary resources in fiscal year 2017 to continue the Guffor Illness Research Program within the Department of Defense's Congressionally Directed Medical Research. It's a unique federal program that merits sustained support from Congress. As the letter details, this program continues to effectively carry out its mission of improving the health and lives of veterans debilitated and suffering from Guffor illness. We need to ensure that these efforts continue for these veterans and for the current and future service members that are also at risk of similar exposures and outcomes. Maintaining this effective treatment-oriented program, providing sufficient funding for the robust research to identify effective treatments, was recommended by the Congressionally Mandated Research Advisory Committee on Guffor Illness in its most recent 2014 report. The request is supported by the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, National Vietnam and Guffor Veterans Coalition, and Veterans for Common Sense. And there, in her letter, it tells who to contact in her office, and that's for the senator staffers to contact and get signed on, and that is by Tuesday, March 15th, because the staffer then has to run around to all these people that are going to sign on, get it signed on, and then the letter goes to the Defense Appropriation Committee. Attached with that is a rather long letter about, and it goes to the Honorable Thad Cochran, Chairman, and Richard Durbin, Ranking Member, Subcommittee on Defense Committee on Appropriations. And it goes in more detail about the funding, what's being done. It's about a page long, so I'm not going to read that. But that's available. We can send it out to people by email. We've got it on Facebook. So that's the push on Senate side. Within the week, hopefully by Friday, we will have the letter from the House side that will be coming out from Representative Rowe and Walsh. Very similar letters, very similar deadline. And our goal as Guffor veterans, Guffor advocates, people out there in the public that know about this, to make those calls, get to the senator's offices in D.C. by phone. Ask for the person, get past the receptionist, ask for the person dealing with the defense appropriations, because that's who is qualified in that office to look at this letter, get its boss to sign on. And so that's what we've been doing every year. I think the deadline on the House side will probably be either 15th or before the 18th of the month. But they are now looking at the viability of this whole congressionally directed medical research program. I hear that McCain was behind it, but there is a meeting tomorrow afternoon at the National Academy of Science building right there by the Vietnam Wall, right across the street. It'll be in the afternoon, the public portion of the meeting. Anthony Hardy will be speaking to the Guffor Illness Research Program and how valuable it is. These are the researchers, like Dr. Bronick at Georgetown, Dr. Goulom at University of California, San Diego, Kimberly Sullivan and Roberta White at Boston, Dr. Klimas in Miami, Dr. Leah Steele now at Baylor Medical Center in Houston. This is an open, competitive process that any researcher can put in for, although no stress research, none, no stress, no PTSD on this. We're looking at a physical illness caused by exposures, and, you know, but the CDMRP has all these other programs. So apparently they, Congress, somebody in Congress, asked the IOM, National Academy of Science, to review the whole thing. So we are under the gun, people. We are under the gun in maintaining our gut research that helps us to get presumptions in. We have bad boys in the mix that are trying to take us back from the exposures and the physical damage to the psychological PTSD, which we know it is not. And I wanted to get that out to everybody, and I'll be sending it to Doug to put on about the show today. And I've read your recent articles, and as always, you're right on top of it. Maybe you could write another article about this push on our funding. But we're a desperation time. I went to the 7th Corps reunion. Now, I was Air Force attached to them as our mobile aeromedical staging facility handling their casualties towards 7th Corps. So I went and I met with General Franks, General Griffin. General Dempsey was there as the speaker. I got to him. He knew they were about to cut this. He said, I'm concerned. He's retired now. He was Joint Chief of Staff. He was in the Gulf with us. Came up through 7th Corps. His mentors were people like Franks. And the reason I went was we had the table for the consortium study with Dr. Leah Steele and Dr. Sullivan there, and I came to help with that. But my main thing was to find those generals, and we've all been saying, where's our generals, where's our colonels to help stand up for us and get the help we need? So that was the mission I took on, even though my body was so freaking tired and sick. I went, I talked to them. Hopefully we'll be more in touch with them and telling them what we need from them, because they need to stand up for their troops, number one. They don't have to tell all the details of things that may still be classified, but just stand up, come to a hearing where we're going to have another hearing shortly, sometime probably March, and stand up, be there. They'd be recognized. They would stand up and basically say, I'm tired of this. Our troops are sick. They're dying, and they need help now. What a statement that would be. So we're still battling, Gary. I'm in and out of D.C. every time we have something going on from Denver. We have a problem, and I may have found us some help. The research money is so tight, we don't have the funds to cover an airline ticket to get those out there. They may get $100, maybe a little more on some of them, to participate, but that won't help them get to Boston or to Miami, you know? They need the money to fly in or have gas money to get there if they have to stay overnight, you know, have a place to stay. So I did meet with a person there at the reunion that's involved with AUSA that said he could take on that. We need to get every service organization we can find to help with that so that we can get these vets. The consortium study is the first one with multiple universities involved with 300, we want 300 vets. That's a pretty big number versus our 60 or 30 that we've had in other, you know, small sample studies. But we, the researchers have been standing with us, fighting with us to help prove, dead to right proof from our body with biomarkers, with the neurological brain scans, that this is real. And these people are suffering, including myself, including Doug. I don't know what it's going to take, but I know we're down to the end of our rope when they're trying to cut funding for the CDMRP, which is our only good research. The VA-sponsored research has to be a VA researcher. And if they don't even believe in chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or gut borne illness, it's hard for our vets to even get their claims approved. That's where we're at. That's the reality. That's the situation report.
Here is a suggestion. You and probably another 1,000 individuals, more or less, who have the capacity, the charisma, the determination, and the insights to educate the vets have been doing so. It is now imperative that there be a march on Washington where vets can go, maybe one in New York, one in Washington, D.C., one in Los Angeles, where the vets will go and have the American public join them and their families go to have platforms that need to be addressed. Universal health care for all vets, no matter whether they have proof or not, because the veterans' vaccine records were intentionally destroyed, over 70,000. And they had that squalene in there, but it only enhances the botulism or the anthrax spores in their body. To be able to say, we want these vets helped, and we want them helped now, without any more paperwork. Also to get veterans into regular hospitals. And that can be done by executive order by the President of the United States. So the vets don't have to wait on a veterans hospital, which sometimes can be a three-year wait. Many vets die in the process. Also, to encourage other physicians, dentists, chiropractors, psychologists, any neurologist, any profession within a community to come together and try to help the vets in their hour of need. Also, to have places where vets can get the type of psychological help they need to overcome the trauma. Because for a person who's watching some form of adventure or murder or horror, and you're watching it on television or in a movie theater, you know that it stimulates the adrenal glands, but you're not going to have anyone come out of that screen and stab you, shoot you, blow you up. You go home. You go back to your life. You go back to your family. You're okay. But for the vet, that's not true. For the vet, every single second of their experience in that battle conflict was as if someone could come out, could take advantage of that, and could hurt them. That is what's not being discussed. And therefore, they suffer from trauma. And trauma has a way of playing out in different people in different ways. So what we need is we need to have the vets' problems help, but not through the typical pharmaceutical model, which itself causes depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts. 23 vets every single 24 hours are killing themselves. This should be a major issue. It is a non-issue.
And that's because what the VA is doing, and what was testified by David Winnett, he's got 10,000 on his Facebook page, and I help him on that. But he did a simple question of, are you being pushed to psychology versus physical medicine? And overall, I mean, you got 300 responses within the day. And they are sending them to mental health. They're putting them on psychotropic drugs that just makes them walking mummies, really. And it's a lot of those drugs are counterproductive for the ones with gut for illness. One of the people that came to the hearing, I met two new people that, by my hollering out on Facebook, they came. One was the LPN that took care of Fisher that had the documented mustard gas blisters. The other one was the wife of a full third colonel. And they were trying to diagnose him with other things, Alzheimer's and all. She got a second opinion at, I think, Hopkins. And it's a cortical deterioration. And that's what we're seeing with the worst cases. He is in a nursing home close to where my daughter lives here in La Plata, Maryland. And he's pretty well non-communicative. And she has gotten no help. Now, they're a colonel, full active duty, retired, but not getting any benefits from the VA, not getting any help. So much stress on his wife, she's ended up hospitalized. This is just one of thousands of stories. And yes, I agree with you. There needs to be a march. Vets are going to have to come in their wheelchairs and their walkers.
We need to have celebrities who would support this, because that draws the media. And I know a lot of celebrities. I know Michael Moore and others. They're friends. I believe that what you should do is you all should organize a day in the summer in Washington
Well, we do have the Memorial Day parade coming up where they're featuring, they're trying to get 500 Gulf War vets up to participate. So there is a parade going on, but we could hold a march at the same time to the VA headquarters.
Okay, that I don't believe that would be good because you're going to have too many distractions on that day because the average American only looks at a Veterans Day or Martin Luther King Day or right. Armistice Day as a holiday.
Exactly. Yeah,
and you're going, and you don't want to compete against the speeches at the, you know, the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers laying the wreath. You want to have no competition on a non-holiday weekend on a Saturday where people can come and get there and go home, and you need to contact the local media to let them know what the problem is. We will certainly be able to use the full facilities, the Progressive Radio Network, in our emails. And then you can have you have a list of your speakers, the vets, come forward, plus doctors talking about that this is a real condition, both showing the Peter Bregan, showing, for example, that the pharmaceutical approach is not working, hasn't worked, has led to people's death, suicide, and then humanistic, holistic psychotherapy does work, and then holistic detoxification does work. So that's the approach I would take, and then film it and then stream it. Remember, you can't get 10 million people to come to you, but you can take your message to 10 million people. And I would donate my film equipment. I would pay for a film crew to be there so that the entire event is filmed and streamed.
One of the big problems
right. We've got the YouTube clips out on the hearing we had. I recommend y'all all watch that, the YouTube hearing. The House Veterans Affairs Committee Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigation has the testimony up printed now on their website. But we also have YouTube that people watched it and taped it and got it on YouTube. So those are up. I think there's 10 different clips of it. Covers the whole hearing. The IOM we did not tape because it was basically a report at the end of their study that really floored us. We had hoped for better, but we knew we were up against the bad people. When we started that process, it was identified ahead of time to have other people involved at the National Academy of Science. That didn't help.
But that's not Denise, that's not the place to fight. You've got to get the children of Gulf War vets who can use social media to tell their mother and father's stories and how they were impacted by what their parents went through. You have to get the Latino and African Americans who were suffering that no one knows, and get them right. to tell their story, and their ministers and their churches to get the congregation behind this. For example, you can have some screens put up where you have people from around the United States can do a live video stream. So if someone's in a church, and there are 300 members of that church congregation, and a person's telling their story in front of that congregation, you're watching it there, but it's being streamed out all over the internet. Use the internet to your advantage. In the last 12 right. months, how many people do you think have come to this network to get information? Just take a guess.
I have no idea. I was wondering that myself.
Okay, Jason, if Jason is there, ask Jason to go into the studio and turn on the mic. Let's ask him. Because remember, the future is the internet. The land-based right. stations are diminishing. The land-based television, what we call terrestrial stations, they're diminishing because the future is in the wireless communications and the internet and the social media. And is Jason there right now?
Let's hi, Gary. How are you?
Jason. Hi, Jason. Jason is the program director and helps run the Progressive Radio Network and our team there. Jason, in the last 12 months, how many people have come to the Progressive Radio Network, our Facebook page, to get information, read articles, listen to radio shows, watch documentaries?
254 million people.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow. That's pretty good, I tell you.
Okay.
Jason, I'm going to be sending you something. There is, we just had a meeting in Miami with Dr. Klimas, She had, probably 100 in attendance. It was an educational session of, you know, what we found so far on Gulfport illness. We had quite a few of our vets there. There's one coming up in Boston, April the 9th, from 8 till 2 in the afternoon, VA Boston Healthcare System, Jamaica Plains Campus, 150 South Huntington Avenue in Boston. And that one's being led by our researchers again, inviting all concerned to come. They're going to have breakfast and lunch served, I think. And they'll go through everything they know about medically, the treatments that are being funded, time to ask questions. And so that is happening on April 9th. They want to have RSVPs to them by March 18th so they can plan for space and food. And that's phone number is 857-364-4183. So I think right now we have a limit of like 200 vets to get in the door there. But I know that we could use it and get videotaping done there. We have one of our individuals that has traveled up from Oklahoma to go to Research Advisory Committee meetings to tape those, get them on tape, get them out to YouTube. He's also doing it through Google Plus groups. And all that's on YouTube of what he's done. He's also interviewed other vets and, you know, like you're saying, Gary, to interview other vets, get their stories out there. He's done a lot himself showing his problems. So we've really gone to, you know, pushing out the YouTube presentations every which way. And he invites any vet to be interviewed and get them videoed and put it up. So we're using YouTube, we're using the media, we're using Facebook.
How many vet groups are out there?
Well, you know, as far as Facebook, we now have, you know, the Gulfport Illnesses page. We have a community page kind of for announcement, you know, general.
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking how many different veterans groups are in the United States?
Oh, I mean, you've got people with VFW Legion. You've got Vietnam Vets of America. You've got AVVets. There must be 20 major ones.
And how many vets do they connect with?
It's hard to tell because the Gulfport vets have gone and tried to join and, you know, speak out at the VFW and the DAV. They kind of get tired because they have their standard little meeting. They try to share information that way. But the biggest groups that have helped us would be Vietnam Vets of America and AMVETS. They have stuck with us all the way. They are with us when we're in D.C. at every function. We have the Sergeant Sullivan Center that came about because Sergeant Sullivan died. And
what about veterans today?
We've got veterans, you know, today covering our stories.
Okay, that's a very active group.
Hey, guys,
yeah,
no,
can I inject something?
To me, what you were saying was about the National Day of Awareness, more or less, would be not only a squeaky wheel like we're doing, it'd be the whole squeaky wagon showing up.
That's correct.
Draw attention from around the world and say, what is this going on? There's a lot of coalition troops that are probably suffering from the same thing. They had never realized what it
is. We're connected with our UK and our Australians for sure. And one of the sad things is UK and Canada, you know, officially remembered the Gulfport vets and the ones that died in the war. U.S. had nothing except reunions for like 7th, 4th, 101st. There was no set reunion or big reunion and big remembrance.
Denise, I've got to summarize this because I've got to be on another program in about 3 minutes.
Right.
What you need in order to make this movement go forward is you need everyone to work together, all the groups,
yes,
for one day, and have the top spokespersons for each group who would be making an appearance. You would have all their members supported and the members' families. The key is to get the children, the teenagers, the young adults, the wives or husbands, the mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, all of the people involved, because then you're dealing with 5 to 7 million people just from the first and second Gulf and the Afghanistan and Iraq. You're dealing with millions of people, and it's just they're not organized. So you got to organize and then get celebrities. I can get celebrities. Then you have a date set aside. Then you stream it live so people all over the world will know about it. Then you have little news clips where you can send short news features that they wouldn't know about to the media, with the hope that many of the media will pick these up. And then you'll start to get some attention. And all it takes is someone who becomes an advocate who is famous to realize there's a mistake going on here. Now, I'll tell you the one group of people that no one ever approaches, and they should: retired heads of America's former major corporations. They sit around West Palm Beach, Naples, Florida, Palm Springs, and other places and play golf or tennis, but the phone doesn't ring. The only time they ever hear the phone ring is when someone has got them on a Rolodex and want to know will they come to an event or give a check. You have people who still have all their faculties who want to do something, and because their life went from 100 miles an hour to 3 miles an hour. And I talk with these people. This is an unused group of assets, and they are no longer beholden to a particular strict corporate or political ideology. They can just look for the truth wherever it is and say it and speak it and share it. And I believe that to get people to know what this cause is, to have a one-page summary of why this is going to be the most important day for veterans, and why every vet and every vet's family must pay attention to it, not just the 23 suicides a day, but the more than a million vets who are suffering, the science that shows the Gulf War Syndrome is real, the fact that we're traumatizing vets with the occupied areas they're going into, but not helping them when they come out of that area, and hence they're destroying families and their health. This is a day to change all that. And then you list the people, the speakers, the Chris Hedges. I could get Chris Hedges, Ralph Nader, Jill Stein. I could get a lot of people. I know a lot of people. And I have my own Rolodex of famous people, is about 2,500. So this would not be hard because it's a real cause. It's not political. So that's what I would suggest you do.
One of the big problems we've run into, and this is with all the veterans organizations, they're so locked into the lies and the myths that they don't share all the information that's necessary and all the documents like you've been putting up and sharing. They don't want to believe it, and then the veterans got such a horrible moral injury that they don't want to deal with until they crash or burn.
Okay, well, that's where you need young, techie people who are taking the articles that I and you and others have written and storm it onto the Internet. All right, that's what you got to do. Okay? Thank you for inviting me on your show.
God bless you, Gary. Thank you, Denise. Thank you, Ray. God bless everybody. We need to fight for America and fight for the veterans. Otherwise, it falls apart. Thank you and good evening. Thank you, Gary, very, very much.